This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane is producing today, and signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial for Talk Louisiana. That's the show, and you can reach us by email at talk@talklouisiana.org, and you can reach us telephonically, and we'd love to hear your voice as we move along this morning at 877-217-5757. We start with Maxine Crump. The last 8 years, she has been president and CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana, and she is here to talk about a few different matters, including the renewed discussion about the wisdom, or lack thereof, of reparations. But before we get there, as far as what Dialogue on Race does, Maxine, I know many of our listeners are familiar to some degree, but you do a lot in the community and informing people, enlightening them, people like me, who have been through the course, and some people have been through multiple times. But what exactly is done with Dialogue on Race?
Dialogue on Race is a space, and by the way, good morning, and thank you for having me. Dialogue on Race series is a series that we have formed the organization Dialogue on Race Louisiana, because the series is our one product. Now, there are several series, of course, but the main thing is to give people an opportunity to use an educational process for talking about race. Too much of the conversation around race is anecdotal and not based on education. However, if it was taught in school, the real history of our country, more people would come in just to have might not even need a Dialogue on Race Louisiana, because they would already know that America is a racialized country that operates with a race structure that began with slavery that is still operating.
When you say it operates with a race structure, what do you mean?
Well, in the beginning, the removal of the natives from the land was one thing. And this is after a constitution of saying we're all equal. And then capture and enslave people and force them to work free to build an economy. And we ended up building the second major economy in the world behind Great Britain as a result of this hand labor. Mm-hmm. With cotton.
Well, we've had a renewal of discussion about reparations, and the New York Times has done a good job covering this. Here's a story from Patricia Cohen that was in Sunday's New York Times, saying, if you're surprised that the issue of reparations for black Americans has taken so long to resolve, blame the president. That's President Andrew Johnson. As the Civil War wound down in 1865, General William Tecumseh Sherman, who, of course, was the first president of LSU, made the promise that would come to be known as 40 acres and a mule, redistributing a huge tract of Atlantic coastline to black Americans recently freed from bondage. President Abraham Lincoln and Congress gave their approval, and soon 40,000 freed men in the South had started to plan and build. But within months of Lincoln's assassination, Johnson rescinded the order and returned the land to its former owners. Congress made another attempt at compensation, but Johnson vetoed it. So now we're at a stage 154 years later where we still haven't made good for those who were aggrieved. And now the question is, how can that be done, or can it be done? Do you think that's possible?
Oh, absolutely possible. America can do anything. I mean, we became a world power on cotton by capturing and enslaving people. And from 1800 to 1865, something like that, that you can build a second economy, you can do anything. So, yes,
but
America definitely
can. But some people say this would be in the trillions of dollars in compound interest. That's a lot of money, even for America.
According to a Kellogg study, America loses $1 trillion a year keeping racism. So if we end racism, we'll have the money.
Would this do it? Would this be a panacea, though? Would suddenly we be enlightened and start treating people as though we have a colorblind society? Would reparations resolve all the issues we have?
Oh, boy, that's a triple question. Well, first off, we don't need a colorblind society. We need a society that sees in color and recognizes there are color differences. So we need to start seeing in color, and we need to stop being blind. We need to stop being blind to our history. And it isn't just money. Reparations, first off, people end up not believing in reparation because it seems like it's something that the 13% of the citizens who are African Americans are asking for something and trying to bankrupt the country, instead of recognizing that reparations would be something that, first off, America would start really truth-telling. America created a story, mm-hmm. and people of all colors have bought the story of America and its greatness, and America is great. But America leaves out part of what made it great because there is an unwillingness to look at the story in its full truth.
877-217-5757. Are we at a point in our world in which reparations should be part of the fabric of our country? This will obviously be a campaign issue in 2020. And, of course, there are those who believe that this would be an appropriate address to those who were aggrieved, certainly the ancestors of those who were. What do you think? U.S. Representative Mike Johnson was booed multiple times during a hearing on slave reparations and racial injustice last week when he said such repayments would almost certainly be unconstitutional on their face, and that monetary reparations from current taxpayers for the sins of Americans for many years ago would be unjust. And it didn't sit well with some in the audience, and certainly those who are descendants of those who were aggrieved have a valid case that this was an injustice that has not been totally addressed. And Maxine, I noted that you were on the cover of the New York Times. We've had you front page of the New York Times on that issue. And you were a part of the group of people, descendants of those who were sold by Georgetown University. Georgetown made an effort and has done some things that are tangible to address this. Has that been an acceptable way to make good for past injustices?
It's acceptable, of course. Is it all that needs to be done? No, it's not.
So in the case of Georgetown, should they do more?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think they would say so, too.
What can be done?
Well, I think that for me, sitting here as one person to work that out wouldn't be fair to our association and our organizations that's constantly in communication with Georgetown in working this out. So it's not a matter of what should they do. It's a matter of coming to an understanding. And the history of slavery and how it has evolved over time is not something that we can just answer in a couple of news cycles. And I know that a lot of people would like us to be able to say, well, Georgetown should be able to do this. But as you can see, this is the most active, open conversation around race and slavery and reparation and many of the things that are associated around it. In my history, and I'm a baby boomer, so I was born after World War II, so this is the first time that a presidential campaign has put something like reparation in their language in direct words. The first time they're looking at things like housing injustice that has been a part of the country putting in place redlining, the government putting in place redlining to keep those who had been enslaved, who had made this country a world power, to keep them from having housing. Because from the beginning, when America said this race hierarchy, that people would go before the Supreme Court to prove who was white, meaning white was the preferred group for America. And that has never been totally dismantled. And as a result, there are discriminations that are continuing to operate in many institutions. And they don't operate because institutions say, we don't want people of color in our institutions. Because at foundational and structural setup of our institutions are still where they can allow this kind of operation because it's foundational. It's just set up to go that way. No one has to use the language anymore. It just operates that way because the structure has never been dismantled.
Owen downtown writes that obviously some African Americans have done exceptionally well, and Others, of course, are below the poverty line, many, perhaps a majority in this country. But should those who are well off be compensated the same as those who are less well off?
You know, his discussion of money is probably anecdotal, and anything I would say would not necessarily change that opinion. But the question is, does he understand the history of the people? Some of them were my people, who were bought and sold and their bodies treated like chattel. And the immigrants who came in, probably including his family, were told, don't worry about them. They're not quite human. This is their destiny to do this, to work for nothing. And so that question doesn't need to be dignified with an answer until it's clear that people like him, like Mr. Owen, understand that this...
All right, we do have to take a break, but we'll pick up where we left off with Maxine Crump after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And the U.S. Congress has taken up the issue of reparations, and it could be a sensitive issue. In fact, it could be a dividing issue in the 2020 campaign for president. And interestingly, Democratic candidates, I'm sure, will be required to take a position on this issue, as will the Republican incumbent Donald John Trump. Maxine Crump of Dialogue on Race Louisiana points out that many descendants of slaves know that their ancestors were violated in the most extreme ways and have never been compensated, if you will, if there is any way to compensate. But reparations is an attempt to at least address what happened more than a century ago. And others say, look, it's time to move on. And we have issues in this country involving poverty of people of all races. And Clarence Page notes that 40% of Americans can't cover a $400 emergency expense. You say America can do anything, Maxine, and maybe it can, but it certainly hasn't done a very good job at addressing poverty of blacks and whites.
Yes, well, that has a history, too. A lot of people in this country were abhorrent of slavery. But there was a point to which America was going to just allow slavery to just die out. But when they really saw the numbers and they really saw what this country was building to, that desire for the poverty and status that could come led them to want to continue that status. And so they just kind of closed their eyes, the real blinding, and looked the other way while the slave system continued. And the slave system didn't just enrich a few planters in the South. It enriched other countries and the North. It was definitely building the American economy, not just the Southern economy.
Here's a question. Maxine on Menlo writes, if reparations fell to African Americans, how would amounts be appropriated? By percentage of DNA, by genealogy? Some African Americans she puts X percent Caucasian or other ethnicities. Some African Americans are not descended from slaves. How might we sort out that if reparations came into being?
Well, I think that that's a problem America needed to solve a long time ago, and that is when mitochondrial DNA shows now that you cannot bundle people into categories that America uses. This modern powerhouse of a country is still grouping people by these color groups and continuing this ranking of preferred status for those Americans who are white. And so solving the problem, that problem needs to be solved probably even more than reparation. The fact that we use these color groupings that were made up as a social construct to justify slavery in the beginning, it has never ended. So when we talk about this as if in the past, or as if we're just answering a news cycle question that we can solve, we miss the fact that we have not truly face the history, named what it is, and put it in the factual textbooks that we teach all of American children K through 12.
All right. Some other inquiries online, and we will go to the phones in just a moment. But here's one from Ryan asking about injustices that were done to people who were Caucasian, Italians, for example, who were discriminated against. And there are other ethnic groups as well who faced discrimination when they came to America. Should they be compensated in any way for past injustices?
They were compensated when they were told they get to be white. They came in as their own ethnicity, and America decided that they could become white, which is a wealth status in America. And they were allowed all the rights and privileges of being white and to own land and to continue. They didn't have to overcome beyond once America decided that they would be white. And they were so willing to make that agreement until they even encouraged their descendants not to use the homeland language anymore. So they were compensated by getting the status that America promises all Americans, and that is to be a full American. And that has not been given to those of color, particularly those who are descendants of slaves.
Well, there was a local country club here up until very recently that discriminated against Italians, would not allow them in, would not allow black people in, of course. That's something that's very recent. Being white wasn't good enough for a lot of these people. There is white privilege. I don't think any of us would deny that. But still, many of these ancestors were definitely discriminated against in profound ways.
Well, there are discrimination that need to be discussed. But to leap away from reparation for slavery means that they don't have an education on the horrors of slavery, that these were people without choice, and that even up to 1877, I'm not sure of the year for Plessy versus Ferguson, when the Supreme Court said the white man, the black man has no right to which a white man is bound to.
Was not equal to a white man.
And that no white man had to honor any right of a man who was black. And that attitude is continuing to pervade,
right,
because the story is still being told like that.
Roger in Lafayette. Roger, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello. Thank you. I was calling to see if your guest is aware of the occurrence of what's called contraband camps post-war, where thousands and thousands of freed slaves were interned in what amounted to concentration camps, and where many thousands died from disease and starvation, and I wonder if she was aware of that issue.
I'm not aware of that in particular, and I'm not sure, but if it happened, it...
Well, another listener notes that Japanese Americans were interred during World War II. Should they be compensated?
Well, during the Civil Rights Movement, many other movements awaken in America. And so this is the same thing happened with reparation. It's like there are lots of movements that probably needed to happen that's riding on the coattail of reparations for African, for those descendant of slaves.
Eric in Bocage. Eric, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Maxine Crump.
Good morning. Yeah, I think reparations is a very bad idea because it's going to further divide Americans. People such as myself are going to say, my ancestors weren't here at the time of slavery. and many people, and we treat black people and all people with respect. And so, it just seems like a foolish idea to us to repay what happened 150 years ago.
Well, the point was made, further divide. So America's already divided. America divided itself when it put people in color groups. And in terms of who should get paid, and that your ancestors wasn't here. Your ancestors wasn't here when it was decided that they would become white instead of the ethnicity that they came in as. So America has denied your ethnicity and given you whiteness because whiteness is a wealth in America.
877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with Maxine Crump.
I think too much time has passed for reparations, and it's political suicide for the Democrats. But I believe there's something called wage slavery, particularly in Louisiana. A $7.25 minimum wage is totally unfair. And most African Americans have less income and less net worth than white people do. And I think having a national minimum wage, maybe a $15, would help alleviate a lot of poverty in the black community. And I also believe in strict enforcement of the Affirmative Action Clause of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that I think will help level the playing field, because certainly people are still suffering from the evils and horrors of slavery. There's no doubt about it.
Good point.
But he says no reparations, that there are other ways to address it.
That I don't know, if people are only thinking of reparation as a check, then I see his point. But what he's saying is these things that are left in place, this unequal payment, is the continuation of how, what slavery evolved into from those descendants. Then that is a part of what would make a difference, is to ensure that justice and equity is made right for those who've been left out of America.
We're visiting with Maxine Crump, President and CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana, 8 years. She also was an accomplished journalist for many years in this community, and the first African-American to inhabit a dormitory at LSU. She's had quite a life and recently found out that her ancestors were slaves sold by Georgetown University. 877-217-5757. We'll be back after this brief pause with more from Maxine Crump, Ernest Gaines, and Marcia Godet also in the coming time with us. But now the news with Karen Henderson on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Maxine Crump, President of Dialogue on Race Louisiana, President and CEO, is with us for a bit more time. 877-217-5757. We're talking about the wisdom, or lack thereof, of reparations. Jay in Mid-City. Jay, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I think this is long overdue. I'd like to thank the John Conyers for fighting this fight for 40-some years. And, sir, many people like you always try to trivialize this reparation by including other groups. These other groups have done nothing to be awarded for anything considered reparations. African Americans was the engine of this country. We built the wealth, the power structure of this country. I mean, we fought every war this country have had. The first casualty of death on American soil was a black man named Christopher Annix. We have done more for this country. We fought the fight for education, for housing, for voter rights, with all these other groups coming in and benefiting from it. But we did. We never got our 4 acres in the mule. I mean, and include Italians and these people, they came off the boat, Ellis Island. These people was given 1,000 acres of land. So whites have never been able to come out, pull up your bootstrap. They was all, they given the boot when they came over here to the shores of America.
All right, and that's not always the case, believe me. They weren't given much of anything in some cases.
They were given the label white, and that's an asset in America.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Yeah.
But is that enough of an asset to overcome? There are a lot of poor white people, and there are a lot of rich black people.
If you're looking at today, if they descended from enslavement, they overcame. When you're white, you don't have to overcome your own country by your color.
Sandra in New Orleans. Sandra, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, Sandra.
I've been listening to this and just been getting a little bit frustrated. So I just thought I'd come in and give a few facts and some historical context. For the people who are talking about the Japanese who were interned were compensated with reparations. Victims of the Salem witch trial, their heirs were compensated with reparations. Italians who were lynched were compensated with reparations. Native Americans, after World War II, were given $1.5 billion in reparations. Discrimination against African Americans was part of governmental policy. At the same time that we were being denied the 40 acres and a mule that we were promised, white citizens had the Homestead Act, which gave them 50 acres of free land when they were opening up the West. But we were barred from participating in that.
All right. Sandra makes some good points.
All good and all accurate.
877-217-5757. William on Corporate Boulevard. Hi, William. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, like the last caller just said, and what was said in the previous statement, the Japanese were given reparations after the internment by Ronald Reagan in 1988. They were given a formal apology and $20,000 for each surviving victim. And I wanted to also say that why are we limiting this to something that, quote-unquote, ended 150 years ago? Are we forgetting peonage, we're forgetting forced felony labor, we're forgetting Jim Crow laws, we're forgetting financial discrimination that lasted well until the 1970s When my father, my white father, bought a house in Millerville in the 1960s, he was not denied access to that American dream like so many African Americans in the city were. Thank you.
All right.
Brilliant. And the good point, because it's not being limited to that. You make it very clear that it evolved into these other discriminatory things because these people were descendants of enslavement.
Hugh in Port Allen. Hugh, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. So as an educator, I've seen racism and the legacy of segregation perpetuated all the way through the system is such a systematic issue that I feel like whenever people talk about reparations, they think it's, you know, targeting direct descendants to give money, where I think the real solution instead should be looking at these places in which people are disparaged against, where students as early as third grade even aren't given a chance to actually receive a proper education, which means they'll never be able to enter the current American workforce. There's so much problems just on that level systematically, where people are having issues getting housing currently, people are having issues receiving proper education, which then becomes a bigger issue, that I wonder if it's more palatable to frame reparations within the idea of making these kind of societal changes, these systemic changes, rather than just some sort of monetary payout.
The point is that most people don't know the connection to what you just described to that original slavery. This is the things you're talking about is the legacy of slavery, and that needs to be made clear. And those things definitely need to happen. That's why we do Dialogue on Race series, because we want people to be educated that those things that you just described are still operating in our society, because much of what was set up during slavery and Jim Crow, as the other caller mentioned, are still operating. They're operating in a subtle way. It's not necessarily, they're not signs up anymore, but there are markers such as dress codes and the names that sound ethnic that are keeping people from their full access. And every American that is American needs to be assured full rights and privileges.
Savannah in Baton Rouge, driving through Baton Rouge. Hi, Savannah. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. We'll try to get Savannah back. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and thanks for having this discussion. At one point in time, Louisiana, before the Civil War, had the most millionaires living in this state of Louisiana, and it was because of the plantation system and white, well, actually, the class system. I think we all suffer from the evils of a class system that, to this day, is dividing us. We could have a peace dividend and be using $800 billion a year in a military, and that is a peace dividend we have never gotten. I think it's a really big thing, the systemic problem of it. We have millionaires now living in Washington that really don't care about us.
Many people leap away from the conversation around slavery to other things because it reminds them of other things. But we haven't fully talked about this legacy and this impact that it's still having today. And that conversation is necessary. It needs to happen and needs not to be leaped away from.
When we talk about the gap between the haves and have-nots, though, Phil makes a point that we have a distinct class issue in this country.
Race is a class issue.
It is, but there's a class issue among whites, too.
But leaping away from the conversation that we're on makes it difficult to get that really clear.
Is it all intertwined, though? Don't you think people of means often discriminate against those without means? Discrimination is discrimination.
Okay, you can buy the furniture at the same time you're framing the house, but, you know, I think this conversation needs to be standing alone because it's been left out of true education.
Savannah, let's give it another shot. Savannah, you're on Talk Louisiana. Please be brief.
Hi, I was listening in, and regarding to the people immigrating and receiving the treatment of whites and the class of whites, I just wanted to kindly point out that my ancestors, the Irish who immigrated due to the potato famine, didn't always get that treatment.
Some of the immigrants were considered citizens and residents until America decided they could become white. So America did finally accept the Irish as white, and they did go through horrors. Irish people don't talk about that now because they are full American citizens. And I will tell you that it is very likely that if what had happened with the Irish, that they had become fully incorporated as full American citizens, likely African Americans wouldn't be talking about what's being talked about today.
And you're saying that African Americans are not incorporated as full
citizens? Not fully. Nothing has been done to ensure that African Americans are full American citizens. It's just on paper, but the assurance is not there. If so, then America, like you mentioned earlier, is not doing a proper job of ensuring it.
Joe and Crowley. Joe, you'll be our final caller for Maxine Crump. Hi, Joe. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, it's been 42 years since I sat across from Maxine Crump
Joe.
At Channel 9. And I'm
all right,
still
Joe,
in
we don't have time for pleasantries. What's your question, Joe?
Okay. Is there a book in the works? Are you going to write a book, Maxine? You certainly should.
Thank you.
Are you writing a book?
I'm not right now.
Okay. Before we leave, I did want to make mention that this week is the 66th anniversary of the Baton Rouge bus boycott. It actually concluded on this date in 1953. It was the strategy that was used in Montgomery, and it is often overlooked as far as the significance of T.J. Jemison in particular, who led this and made a point that was quite profound.
Hope this analogy doesn't... It's overlooked because it ended by a compromise, and the compromise was to get a seat on the bus. Whereas when Martin Luther King studied it, he saw that some of the people as a part of that movement wanted to continue the movement because they saw that they could get more than a seat on the bus, that they recognized that all of the hard work and sweat that had gone into the movement, they saw that they had an impact that could help to change segregation in Baton Rouge, but it was stopped with the compromise. And King took it, and with the group that he was leading, they saw that instead of a seat on the bus, they could continue it to a movement, and they did.
Well, we thank you for your time today, as always, Maxine, and thanks for your candor. Appreciate it. And we'll see what happens. This is an issue I think that will be with us for a while.